Welcome to SportsBeat KC, the Kansas City Star's daily sports podcast. It's Wednesday, October 13th, and I'm Blair Kirkhoff. We're talking soccer today with Sean Goodwin and covering plenty of topics, starting with KC NWSL coming off one of its most impressive results of the season, a scoreless draw with Portland. We chat about Sporting Kansas City and the U.S. men's national team as well. The U.S. team continues its World Cup qualifying play tonight against Costa Rica, and we take up the cause of Kansas City as a World Cup host in 2026. Okay, let's get started talking soccer with Sean Goodwin.
Sean, how are you doing today?
I'm splendid, Blair. I've got plenty to talk about, so I need to wake myself up this morning because I can't be tired for this one.
Absolutely not. First of all, we got a couple of games today. Ideally, we would have done this later in the week and we would have discussed the results of some games, but we're going to choose this week to advance a couple of games, one of which is KCNWSL playing tonight against the Houston Dash and the women coming off, I don't know, would you consider it the best result of the season for them, the scoreless draw against Portland on Sunday?
I mean, I wouldn't call it the best result of the season.
Just given Portland's in first.
I mean, you look back and, of course, you've got victories, going back over. Oh, Rain was a pretty good result. He had a 0-0 tie against North Carolina Courage, which was up there. But, yeah, no, it's definitely... I don't know if you call it your best result per se. It's up there, but at least when it comes to performance, maybe it's definitely one of the best performances because, as you said, it was first place Portland Thorns. And Kansas City not only held them to a 0-0 tie, they were definitely on the back foot for the second half, but they looked pretty much equal as well. So it was a good game to watch.
What stood out? Obviously, the defense. Seemed like there were a couple of good saves in there too.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much what you said. It was kind of a good defense for sure. In the first half, a big point of emphasis, I'd say, was the ability for KC to switch the points of attack. Just because Portland has that midfield diamond. I mean, I remember games earlier this season. I can't remember specific teams, but that's something that Kansas City was attempting to do back when you were a little bit more of a newer team, switching our points of attack, rotating around the diamond, and that's something they struggle with, and that's why they would get pinged back for, 70, 75 minutes a game. But this game that just happened this past weekend, yes, the first half wasn't, the most exciting. Kansas City did score. A goal that was disallowed, but honestly, I don't think should have been disallowed. Kristen Hamilton broke through after pretty much Aaron Menges seemed to have stumbled into Hamilton, who then fell into Becky Sarbrunn, who, of course, we know from FCKC back in the days here. And Hamilton goes through, scores past Bella Bixby, nice little finish, and it's called back because of a foul on Sarbrunn, which I don't think it was. It was pretty soft, but it's what it is. Outside of that, pretty quiet first half. But again, when you're playing a first place team, if it's quiet, you're doing something right, aren't you? And then, second half kind of got pinged back a bit, but 0-0 draw, so you can't really complain about it.
I like French had a nice save on a corner kick in about the 73rd, 74th minute. Really nice job. And I think this is right. Is it 230 minutes of holding an opponent scoreless on home field? Something like that. It's incredible. That's a really nice streak going for KCNWSL.
Yeah. I guess the last time it was a few seasons at home would be Louisville in that 2-1 win back in August now. Obviously, there's been a couple of breaks because of international play and whatnot. So, August seems so far away now. They've now went, I believe, 5 home games without losing. So, if they've won 2 of those and they've tied 3, and the 3 ties have all been 0-0. So, in the last five home games, Keith conceded once, and I was in a 2-1 win. So, you know, on the road, obviously, that's kind of the next step. How do they pick up points on the road? But we've finally made Legends Field a bit of a fortress, and hopefully that carries into Children's Mercy Park next year.
Right. And listen, when a team's having a season that KCNWSL is having, all you can ask is that they improve throughout the year.
Yeah.
Stay interested. Look interested, like they're trying, and that's the case here. They don't have the personnel to match up with other teams, most other teams in the league. But I think this run over the last several weeks has proved that they're in there, right? They're gutting it out, and they're, you know, credit to Hugh Williams and the coaching staff for having these women play the way that that they have over the last few weeks.
Yeah, for sure. And honestly, Blair, you can, especially if Kansas City managed to pull out a win tonight again here in Kansas City, go be 2 points behind Louisville. And then Kansas City's last three games, Chicago on the road, followed by Gotham and OL Reign, both in Kansas City. At that point, you can maybe start dreaming about, you know, stealing ninth place after sitting rock bottom all season. Because Louisville's end of the season ain't exactly, you know, easy. You've got Orlando, who's been flying high. And then home and home kind of deal against, say, Gotham FC to finish the season. So, yeah, especially if they win tonight, you've got three games to overtake Louisville. And I think that should be this team's goal at this point, just steal away ninth place and not finish bottom of your first season.
Hey, before we move on from the women's team, let's at least acknowledge what happened in the first early in the game at the 6 minute mark. Game was underway, and at 6 minutes, the game essentially came to a halt, and the teams met at midfield and basically had a silent protest over the events that we talked about last week, of course, that were well chronicled by The Athletic, the sexual abuse of coaches and the sort of the willful ignorance of management and administrative league administrators on this. So did this happen throughout the MLS or the NWSL on weekend games?
Yeah, it actually started on the Wednesday prior. There were three games, so six teams, including Portland, actually. So Portland did it a couple of times. There was at least a couple of questions if, you know, heading into the weekend, will teams do it, especially teams who have already done it on the Wednesday. But Kansas City doesn't have a chance. And, you know, Portland was more than happy to, you know, continue that demonstration and, you know, I guess speaking out against the ignorance of the league. So, yeah, no, I mean, you kind of covered it well, Blair, and we talked last week about the reasons why. So I know we have plenty of other stuff to talk about, but it was good to see. It was a powerful moment. And good videos on my Twitter as well, about 45 seconds of the players coming together. You know, everyone in the stands was applauding. So, you know, it was a powerful moment for sure.
Very good. Okay, as we said, Houston Dash at Legends Field tonight. And looking at the forecast, looks like the rain will be gone. So, but bring a jacket, right? It's highs in the low 60s tonight. Should be fun. Just a few games left for KCNWSL, and a few games just a few games left at Legends Field. As you said, they're moving to Children's Mercy Park next season.
I will say,
yeah,
tonight's game is a buy one get one as well. So if you're quick, buy one get one tickets.
Excellent. So,
if you have nothing to do and you hear this podcasting time, here's a date night for you.
There you go. Get over there. Listen, I've been struck by the images of families and kids attending the games. And we've talked about this. And I know we spent some time talking with Allie Trost about this also on previous podcasts. It's just how fan friendly this team is, and how they'll spend almost as much time as anybody wants to after a game to visit and greet fans. Yeah. It is a great experience, and you're not going to get closer to professional athletes than what KCNWSL offers after home games. So it really is a great experience that I would recommend for anybody to head out there, especially if you've got kids.
Yeah, no, for sure. You know, it's getting a little bit better nowadays, at least for us journalists, in that, you know, I wait in the tunnel for the players and chat to who I want and go a little bit quicker nowadays. But I still remember that first game we won. I was waiting at least an hour for players just to leave the field because they were, you know, pictures of fans and signing autographs. And it was a great scene. So thankfully for me, you're a little bit quicker nowadays. Pulling out grace.
All right, let's switch teams, Sean. Talk about Sporting Kansas City. And there was a kind of a disturbing story that broke after we recorded last week's podcast and involves Felipe Hernandez. Why don't you just take us through what was discovered, what was announced, what you wrote? And we've got a link to the story in the show notes. And, of course, it's on kansascity.com. But kind of a troubling story that I hope has a happy ending.
Yeah, you hope it's got a happy ending. But, essentially, Felipe Hernandez, you know, he plays on July 4th. And, you know, he's playing well for Sports and he's doing a great job. And then we hear nothing of him. He's gone for personal reasons. And then last week, it comes out, MLS Soccer releases that he'd been suspended for gambling on MLS games, which is very much against league rules. Which, you know, right off the bat, we don't hear a lot of that nowadays in, you know, professional sports. We always go back to Pete Rose when we hear stuff like that. But now Felipe, he came towards Sporting KC on July 5th, the day after the game, came to Peter Vermees and said, "Hey, I've got gambling debt," and he's worried for his safety. You know, that can mean plenty of things when it comes to gambling world, right? And we don't know the specifics on if the debts are even paid off, why he feared for his safety. That was all kind of kept, you know, in with Felipe and law enforcement. But yeah, he came forward to Peter Vermees. They got him the help that he immediately needed. But through MLS and police investigation, it was found that he's bettered on two MLS games. I'm sure, you know, plenty of other games as well throughout different sports, you know, certainly not recommended, but you can, as a player, bet on other sports. But now, two MLS games, and that was the issue. The report found none of them were sports and KC games. Felipe doesn't have any inside knowledge. And he can apply to be reinstated on January 1st, 2022. But yeah, no, just disturbing. Just in the fact that Felipe came out on Twitter, like once it was all published, and said, you know, I have a gambling addiction. He's seeking help. He went through counseling and, you know, he was sent to a rehab facility. So, like you said, Blair, hopefully there's a happy ending and that. He's a 23-year-old kid. I say kid, I'm 25 this month. Not much younger than me. But, you know, he's a young soccer player. So for him to come forward to get help, that takes a lot of bravery. And, you know, hopefully, you know, he gets past this, he feels safe and he can come back just as strong, because Peter says he's 100% welcome back if he's reinstated.
You know, gambling is, at least in the United States, is becoming more prevalent, right? As states introduce wagering, and Missouri and Kansas don't have it yet, but it's going to happen in these states. And it's in, I don't know, 15, 20 states now. I mean, there are ways to do this that don't involve being, getting caught up in sort of nefarious folks. And that sounds like that's what happened here in this case, that the amount of money that he owed and fearing for his safety. So, yeah, again, I hope the story has a happy ending. It sounds like it's on its way to having a happy ending. So Sporting doesn't play, they're on a break, right? Don't play again until Sunday. They're at Vancouver. And I got to tell you, when I look at the standings or the tables, whatever you prefer, I finally see, you know, Kansas City and just about everybody else with the same number of games played. And it was always frustrating, right, to see Sporting with two games more than Seattle or Colorado or that sort of thing. Everybody's played 28 games at this point going into tonight's tonight's games. Kansas City's five points behind Seattle. It's going to be tough to make that up. But now they're trying to stave off Colorado, which is a point behind Sporting. And so it begins on Sunday. You know, the home stretch begins Sunday at Vancouver. And this is a playoff team, obviously. They are chasing first place where they finished last year. It's going to be tough for them to do that, though, to get there, isn't it?
Yeah, I think what Sporting really need is Seattle to lose one of their remaining games. And then obviously Sporting basically win out, which includes playing in Seattle. And I think we chatted about this last week as well, Blair. And, if fate is in St. Sporting KC's hands, unless Seattle tie, if Seattle ties in a different game, Sporting can try and catch up on goal difference. You're currently five behind, which is a bit of a mountain to climb. But again, they play Seattle, so we could take a good chunk out there. Or the other alternative is, yes, Seattle lose game and the Sporting game, and then Sporting can overtake them. But that's a lot of if, buts, maybes, and whens. I think a more realistic goal is, yes, stay off Colorado, secure second. And at that point, you've got home field advantage through the playoffs until you would assume the conference final if Seattle and Sporting both make it that far.
So it's seven teams that make it into the playoffs from each conference, and Sporting is well, may have already mathematically clinched. I don't know, but there is going to be a real fight for some of the final positions in the Western Conference. So the bracket won't take shape for a few more weeks. Sean, as we said earlier in the show, there are a couple of matches tonight that are of interest. One is, of course, KC NWSL. You'll be there. The other one is the U.S. men's national team, and they are in Columbus, Ohio, taking on Costa Rica. U.S. men's national team coming off a loss to Panama, I should say at Panama. And things have been going well for Greg Burkholder's team until this loss. And, of course, whenever the U.S. men's national team loses, within the American soccer community, it's a crisis. I just cannot imagine what it's like to be in England or France or Italy or Brazil, where the nation is the soccer community and there's a loss, or say a 1-1 draw with Hungary, which is what happened earlier this week with England. But within the soccer community, a lot of gripes about the outcome, and it does put a little pressure on the U.S. team. It would be a good idea for the U.S. to hold serve at home and pick up 3 points. They are second in the eight nation standing, and top three advanced. And the only reason they're second is they're second on goal differential. So I think with Panama and Canada's looming in third right there, top three advance. The fourth team gets into a sort of a play-in playoff for the World Cup out of this part of the world. So a lot of pressure on U.S. to, especially after not making it 4 years ago.
Yeah, you kind of covered it all right there, Blair. But now lost to Panama most recently, it's U.S. has historically struggled in Panama, but like you said, this is a pressure's on, and this is supposed to be a new team that should be dominating CONCACAF, hopefully. And we've had these discussions, and I think I remember I got heated a little while ago, and yes, back in the past, ties on the road against the likes of Panama and Honduras and, Costa Rica, obviously, that's a home coming up.
Hey, it's Blair. we have a special subscription offer for SportsBeat KC listeners, unlimited digital access to the Kansas City Star's award-winning sports coverage. Sign up now for 1 year of Sports Pass for access to all the sports news, features, and columns presented on the KansasCity.com site, and it's only $30. That's a 40% savings off our regular rate. Your subscription will automatically renew after the initial term at $50 unless you tell us to cancel. Your subscription helps support the sports coverage of KansasCity.com and the Kansas City Star, and that support has never been more important. Please visit KansasCity.com/SportsBeatKCOffer to get this special offer. And as always, thanks for listening.
Sean, what about Gianluca Busio? He's a member of the U.S. men's national team. I don't believe he traveled to Panama. I don't know. I know he didn't play. So it'd be great for, you know, local soccer here for Gianluca Busio to be a member of a U.S. men's national team that goes to the World Cup. Happened in 2014 when both Graham Zusi and Matt Beisler were part of that with the U.S. men's national team that played in the World Cup. So prospects of Gianluca Busio being a playing member of this team?
Yeah, hopefully. You'd hope that he gets a game in his cycle. You know, they brought him in. The first game of this break, he wasn't even included in the squad because it's only a 23-man squad. So he wasn't even around for the Jamaica game. You know, Panama, he doesn't get in. And then Greg Berhalter said he hopes to get Busio some playing time in a World Cup qualifier. On the flip side, you know, as we were saying, you've just lost to Panama on the road. And I think 7 points out of nine was the minimum out of this window. 9 out of 9 would have been great. And all of a sudden, they've lost the game and they're now behind Mexico and they have to beat Costa Rica. And, you know, me personally and lots of other people think Busio would help this midfield a lot with his, you know, his forward thinking mindset and the passes he's able to play. But again, good day. That's not where Greg Berhalter is. And, you know, he's, again, Busio doesn't have World Cup qualifying experience. And in walking out, again, feels like a must-win game just because he got lost to Panama against must-win game against Costa Rica. It depends if Berhalter puts him in because, again, he's probably going to go for his strongest squad or the guys he trusts most. That right now, it's not Busio, so it'd be nice to see. But I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, look, that was their first loss, by the way, in like 12 games. I think they'd been 9-0-2 in their previous 11 in that internationally. So, you know, they've played okay. I mean, they've been good. But I'll tell you what, if the U.S. doesn't qualify for the 2022 World Cup, then
it's like our sex soccer so far back in this country.
Listen, temporarily because of the 4 years hence, right? They're going to automatically qualify for 26. Hey.
We'll be in 2026, Blair. Don't you worry.
Right. So, all right. Well, speaking of 2026, at that event last week, media event at Children's Mercy Park, that was part of one of the several topics that was covered by Peter Vermees and Hugh Williams and Vladko Andonovsky, but the site selection for the World Cup is upon us. It's next week, and there's a speaking of upcoming events. There's one tomorrow that I know you'll attend. I'm going to go down there. One of the streetcars is going to be decked out in World Cup 2026 Kansas City bid regalia. So. I like what Peter Vermees had to say about it. I asked him, does Kansas City's, you know, small market size hurt or help or indifferent in its bid? And he, you know, he went on to say that, you know, he thinks it can help. There's not a big traffic issue in Kansas City. The facilities are probably as good as any city that's bidding. It's just that Kansas City is one of 17 U.S. cities that is bidding for the 2026 World Cup to have games here. And I think only 11 of those cities are going to be selected. So I'll see you out there tomorrow, Sean. But do you have a sense, a vibe of how the World Cup candidacy of Kansas City is going?
Kansas City will definitely come down into that, you know, the city's going to be kind of on the edge of, you know, will we get it, will we not? Because I think you can toss in a couple of locks. So, you know, they'll do New York's and LA's and, you know, probably Chicago.
Chicago. Chicago didn't do it. Miami is one that is kind of considered a lock, just because that was surprising, actually, that Chicago didn't put in a bid, and probably helps Kansas City's chances as a Midwestern destination for the World Cup. But how about the facilities that Peter talks about? Yeah. You're out there. I mean, there's everybody has facilities, but I just think that what Kansas City can offer is not necessarily available in a Cincinnati or a Nashville or Denver, even, you know, maybe some cities that Kansas City could be competing against.
Yeah. You know, it's the soccer facilities that make a difference. I mean, it's not just the, you know, stadiums to play in, because I think for the World Cup, I mean, they'll be looking to play in Arrowhead because of the size.
Right.
That's great if, you know, huge teams coming to town. But here's my thing, Blair, and I've been saying this the whole time, and I didn't think the World Cup committee is listening to me on this one. But, you know, there's plenty of games, especially if you watch the World Cup, and it's going to be an expanded World Cup. There's going to be a lot of smaller teams, or at least teams from far away, that are playing in these games. So I end up getting a game that is, you know, it could be Panama versus Ghana or something, you know. That type of game, I'd love for it to fill out Arrowhead, but if you watch all games of the past, those early group stage games, you know, they attract a decent crowd from people in the area, and a few people have travelled to see their team. But toss that into Children's Mercy Park, 18,000 people, you can probably fill, you know, 18,000, and you've got a great atmosphere. It's tight, and you're not sitting in huge Arrowheads with 50,000 empty seats, you know. But anyway, that's my spiel of what I've been saying for a while. You look like you're about to say something, Blair. Do you have anything on that?
Well, all I would add would be, you know, once the sites are identified, it'll be interesting to see. Look, when the site selection folks are here, and they're going to tour all the facilities, right? They'll go to Arrowhead, and they'll go to Children's Mercy Park. They'll go to the training facilities, and
that's
even
a big pass, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sure they'll even go up to Riverside, where the U.S. women's team is, or the KCNWSL is going to have their new facility. But once you've identified the stadium, which will be Arrowhead, and whether it's, you know, Ghana versus, you know, Korea, or, you know, France versus Brazil, it's going to end up being in the same place. I like your thought, though, to have a 20,000 seat stadium available for a game that might not have the interest, hold the interest level. But I think that I don't know if that's happened in World Cup.
It doesn't. Yeah.
You know, in one thing, and we'll talk about this at a future show because we're running out of time here, but one thing that is I'm curious about is when nations held World Cups previously, what was Russia in the previous Men's World Cup, and Brazil before that, and I believe South Africa in 2010, none of those countries have the amount of cities with populations that the U.S. is offering the World Cup. So there had to be instances in those previous World Cups where you had matches that were not very attractive, not necessarily attractive on a world stage, but did fans in those cities, in Russia, in Brazil, in South Africa, fill their stadiums? Probably not stadiums as large as the ones the U.S. is offering.
No, not even close. I say the points I'm saying because I've been watching the sport since I was a wee kid. I think the earliest World Cup I vaguely remember would be 2002, which was Brazil, I believe.
No, that was in Japan and South Korea shared it.
Yeah. But Brazil won it, actually.
They did, beat Germany.
I think all the way back then, all the World Cups I've seen, because the games with, lesser populated teams or not populated, but, teams that aren't as high up the ladder of soccer dominance and their fans have to travel across the world and stuff. I've seen plenty of games where it's just half empty stadiums and stuff. And I just look at those games and I say, if you put that in a 20,000-30,000 stadium opposed to a 50,000, you'd have a much better atmosphere. But alas, I didn't think I was going to do it.
How you think about it. I think that's a forward way of thinking about it. Let's take advantage of the facilities that are available to you. That makes all the sense in the world to me. That should be on the table when the FIFA folks make their site visits next week.
Yeah, I'm sure plenty of people are listening to this, me included. If I'm still covering soccer in 2026, I'd love to cover the World Cup. If I'm not doing soccer, I'd probably buy tickets if it is Ghana versus Panama. I don't care if it's a World Cup game in my hometown. I'll be buying tickets if I'm going as a fan. I'm sure plenty of other people will.
Sure.
And you ask a question, are there 20,000 other people like myself who would buy tickets for two random teams in a World Cup, And I'm sure it wouldn't be very, very cheap. So at that point, there's a lot that goes into it, but sorry for taking us off course here, Blair, but Kansas City, Grace, you've got again Swope Park, Riverside, you've got the Compass Minerals National Performance Center where Sporting and US practice and train. Obviously, you've got the soccer fields down in OP, which you've got Olathe Garman, which I know they're more just kind of big soccer facilities for youth soccer, but again, very nice fields that teams can absolutely take advantage of. So on the soccer side, Casey's got a lot going for it. And I did see a really interesting, it was an overhead of Kansas City. You see these massive cities. I was just chatting to a friend else in Colorado and he said the traffic in Denver is a nightmare because, the highway basically goes through the city and it's above ground and good traffic just gets gridlocked. Plenty of other big cities are like that. Kansas City, I think the only highway that goes through it, correct me, Blair, go on, that goes right past the Stars office. Which one is that?
Interstate 70.
70, it kind of goes underground, and the rest of the highways around Kansas City is basically in a circle. And I know Arrowhead and whatnot get out of the city, but a lot of good tourism is going to be coming into Kansas City. And you've got a really nice highway system that basically doesn't clog up the city. It's right around with I-70 that cuts underground basically through the middle of the city. So transport's great. You've got the new airport, the terminal being built. You've got the streetcar. So Kansas City's got a lot going for it. And I know Peter talked about it himself, just about location and being in the middle of the Midwest and not too many cities around us to compete. Casey's got a lot going for it. I think he stands a good chance.
All right, we're going to hear from Peter Vermees in a moment. And this is what Peter Vermees had to say about the World Cup. But for now, we're going to bid farewell to Sean. Great conversation. Love spanning the globe with you, Sean, talking soccer. And stay warm tonight when KCNWSL plays the Houston Dash. And we'll talk to you again next week.
So
I want to ask you quickly about the World Cup and the site selection is coming by the end of the month. What are you expecting? What do you want to show them when they're here?
I think the first thing is it's a big part of, right, the facilities, that speaks for itself. We have it all here. So I think that's a really big positive for us. And the other thing is that a lot of the people that are coming have already been here for other events. So that helps as well. Always how the public you know, supports the games is an important aspect too. But the rest, I think, is already there. I mean, you come to this stadium, we have Arrowhead, we have you know, our two training facilities. I mean, we have the facilities. And then I also think the other thing too is that maybe it doesn't get discussed a lot, but it's very easy to get around in this city for the teams as well. Whereas, look, I've been in Olympics, World Cup myself as a player, and I know what it's like to go to some of those places and how much the traffic can be a real burden on the team and just getting around. And so here it's really manageable. And I think sometimes, you know, people don't mention that, but I think that's a big part of it as well.
And we've been living this now for years, right? The bidding process. You know, you've got you said the facilities, they're great over here, but if Kansas City didn't get games, what would be the level of disappointment, you think?
It would be high. I think the other thing too is you then hope that you become sort of a pre World Cup training environment, because again, we have so much here. That frankly, a lot of other places don't have. They don't have the facilities that we do. So, you know, I mean, that's second best, but obviously we want to be one of the venues for sure.
Hey, Peter, getting back to the World Cup, just as, you know, you've been a kind of a spokesperson for the city at large, and as Kansas City becomes more of a destination place, you know, how important is it that soccer is part of that narrative, this new narrative?
Well, yeah, I think, again, when you look at what's happened since, and I use 2011 since we opened the stadium, the growth, just forget about, you know, the Sporting Kansas City, but the growth of the game in this area where, you know, Sporting Kansas City is a big part of that landscape, but so is the youth part of the game as well. And I think as that continues to grow as it is, I think we've become extremely relevant in the national market for sure in soccer. You know, I have a lot of respect for a lot of other areas in the country, but there's no doubt that this place has changed immensely since even I played here in 2000 and, you know, in 2000, 2001, 2002. It's changed immensely, and it has a lot to do with our ownership group and sort of their commitment and pledge to, you know, really connecting this club with the community. And I think all of that has resonated. And that's why a lot of clubs that are coming new into MLS come here and use this as a stopping ground to, hey, this is what they do. Look at their stadium. So a lot of stadiums that have taken a big jump from this place because they're new and they've seen everything that we've done and they've tried to replicate a lot of that stuff. So I would say that we're definitely there.
Can market size and geography play a role in favor of Kansas City when this comes down to one of the 17?
I would like to think so. That's what I was saying earlier, because I think sometimes what happens is that you go to these big cities and it's hard to manage, you know, a team in those big cities, getting them around. There's a lot here that could really work for us being a venue. There's a lot. And I, you know, not to be redundant, but you can't take away the facilities. You can't take away how you get around the city. And then, look, I'm from New Jersey. I consider myself probably more of a Kansan now than a New Jerseyan. And people here are great. It's just a great environment. So I think any group of teams that were here in a venue, I think they would have an incredible experience.
That'll do it for today. Thanks to our SportsBeat KC production staff of Beth Welsh, Monty Davis, Jeff Rosen, and Chris Fickett. Big thanks to Sean Goodwin for stopping by and talking soccer. You can read his stuff and all soccer stories on kansascity.com. Hey, you know about the Morning Sports Edition, right? Now, if you don't, let me tell you about it. On kansascity.com, you go to the Stars E-Edition. That's a replica of the printed newspaper on your screen that comes with your digital subscription. Well, now there's an updated sports section produced separately that goes along with it. When you open the E-Edition, there's a box in the upper right-hand corner that says All Editions. Click on that, and you can access about, I don't know, 15, 20, 25, even 30 pages of sports. Maybe you get it through a link in your email. I do. It's always there by about 6 in the morning. But either way, it's access to complete coverage of the previous day's sports news, features, statistics, everything. It's fantastic. Hey, thanks for reading The Star and for listening to our podcast lineup. You're helping support the best sports and news coverage in Kansas City, and we couldn't produce programs like SportsBeat KC without you. We'll be back on Thursday with another episode.